From starting his own career as a 16-year-old with the famous John Kennedy as his coach, through to coaching Kennedy's grandson to a premiership, John Longmire has packed a lot in. And here, he talks of the learnings out of winning and losing grand finals, his mateship, a sometimes fiery mateship with Alistair Clarkson, and how it always hurts to tell a player that his career is finished. John Longmire, thank you for your time today.
Good to be here, Damo.
9th year as Sydney Swans senior coach, 17th year in total as a Swans assistant coach slash coach. The John Longmire of today, how is he different to that person?
Oh, a fair bit different. I came out of, I retired at 28, spent 3 or 4 years as a player manager at IMG, and went to Sydney, what I thought would be just a couple of years, 2 or 3 years. Just got married, no kids, went up there as an assistant coach, thought I knew a bit about the game. 6 months in, Ronnie Eade left, and Paul Roos took over. I didn't know Roosie very well at all before then, and from that moment on, I've changed a fair bit, I think. You are who you are to a fair degree, but I just continually learn, and from the moment I really got to Sydney, the journey has been fantastic. I've been very fortunate.
It's a brutal game, and it's a brutal industry. You regularly are faced with setbacks and problems that you could not possibly envisage even an hour earlier than them happening. Do you still love the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I bounce out of bed every day, and part of the bouncing out of bed is those challenges. I mean, it's you never know what the next day is going to present. From a couple of players like Rampy falling over a chain and breaking his arm. I mean, you don't predict that. You prefer it doesn't happen, but there are so many different things that pop up in this game. Kellen Mills last year missed the whole season from round 9 onwards, and just for going for a coffee. There's those things that just present itself. I enjoy the challenge of the code itself in Sydney as well. I grew up in New South Wales, and so I enjoy that. I enjoy the role that we've got in that. I take that seriously. So, and I enjoy trying to build a team and a club. It's a great challenge, and it continually there is something in front of you every day that you've got to get over, and it, I get very stimulated by that.
We'll bounce this conversation around in the next X amount of minutes, but the teenager as you once were who came down from the bush to play for North Melbourne, how much has that person changed? Obviously, age-wise, yes, but when you first walked into North Melbourne as that teenager and where you've now got to, could you have possibly foreseen what's happened?
No idea. I was 16. I grew up on a farm, and I left school in year 10 and was going to be a farmer. I spent 12 months on the farm. We just bought a new property next door. That was my life mapped out. And things changed a fair bit during the course of that year, and I found myself in jumping on a plane to go to London at 16 years of age, and we played in that Battle of Britain game in 1987. And from that moment, I just feel so fortunate to be able to expand my life. I go back to the farm all the time now when I can at Christmas, spend time there. I love it.
What's there now?
I've got my brother and sister, my dad, my family, my wife's family are still back in the country.
It's an active farm.
It's an active farm. There's about over 3,000 acres there. Yeah. And, they had the challenges with the drought. I talk to my brother probably 3 or 4 times a week. It keeps me really grounded. I love it. And but I also feel very fortunate that I've been able to expand the people that I've met, the places that I've been, the travel that I've done, the challenges that I've had, but the success, the whole box and dice. And so it's continually evolves you as a person. It changes you as a person, and hopefully for the better.
Mm. That Battle of Britain game to which you refer, obviously a momentous game in so many ways and so many reasons. Your friendship with one of the people in that game, and we're going to talk about him at some stage of this conversation, we may as well do it now, Alistair Clarkson. It's been an interesting one for us on the outside, how it's evolved over the journey. I know how close you were when you were both young people at North Melbourne.
Yeah.
One of your closest friends and confidants in footy, despite all the dramas of relatively recent times, publicly at least.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the great thing about this game. And I've got ex-teammates like Adam Simpson. There's a number of them around. But Alistair, obviously, I met her very early days. He was one of the first I met when I went to North, and coming from the country, we had a lot of similarities. My wife and Karen are very good friends, and you don't spend a lot of time with each other, and we haven't done of recent times, obviously, because you're so busy, but we've known each other for a long time. We were at the Players Association together. We did a lot of work there, and yeah, we've got a great friendship, and you know, we understand we're rivals, and we both like to win.
I remember you and Alistair would regularly go and watch Liam Pickering play cricket for North Melbourne back in the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. You spent a lot of time together, didn't you?
Yeah, we did, and you know, we formed great friendships. We've been up to the farm, and you know, I'm sure in some point down the track, and we've had a brief chat about this, is when we're all done and dusted, we'll sit back over a glass of red and have a laugh. We've been able to compete in grand finals against each other, and you know, players have gone from either team to each other's teams, and what happens in this game is just understanding that, and at some point we'll sit down and have a good laugh and a chat about it, and you know, hopefully it's still a few years away, but yeah, he's one of the great competitors, and that's certainly what drives probably a lot of coaches in the AFL, is no matter what Ellis has achieved in the game, you just know what he's doing every morning. That's getting up, trying to get better, and that's always there.
It was fascinating last year when you had the public stoush. Now, he created it because he went and visited Gillon McLachlan at a cafe, and as we now know, got the laptop out and highlighted some apparent indiscretions and problems in umpiring in that weekend's game against the Swans. And you didn't take too kindly to that when you got told of that. Can you take us behind the scenes of that? The two great friends that you are, always will be.
Yeah.
But obviously you're going to protect your patch, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And we protect each other's patch. There's no question about that. We make no apologies about that. And you know, Alistair obviously went on the radio on the Saturday, and we had a short text message exchange. And then he obviously got together with Gil on the Monday. And so we both had our respective press conferences, and it blows up for a couple of days, as issues in this game do. And
so you spoke to him, I believe, at some stage of that week. How did that go? You rang him, he rang you.
No, he gave me a call, and we spent an hour on the phone, and we started off with, well, whatever happens from here on in, you know, and you know that we'll both be great mates at the end of this conversation. But we'll be both honest, and we were, and we're still great mates. So I feel very fortunate that I've got a relationship with Alistair. I respect the fact that we can be open and honest with each other, and it doesn't impact our friendship. And
how many words did you get in that conversation?
No, I got a few in here and there, but Alistair's got strong opinions. That's why he's been such a great coach, and you know, we've got strong opinions as well, and in the end, you're not going to agree on everything, and that's okay. And we're there to defend our clubs, and we'll do that. But we'll always remain great mates.
Yep. The ability to do that, John, and get through life as a senior official in the game, as you are as a coach, to almost preempt the conversation that's about to happen, but realise that, hey, I've got to do this, you've got to do that too, I'm not going to take offence to that. Is that been crucial to you surviving at this level for so long, and where you also see yourself in?
Yeah, you do. I mean, you have to rationalise it in your own mind, and you know, the Lance Franklin deal was probably one you have to rationalise in your own mind. Josh Kennedy before that, I'm sure, that you know that you know, everything in your power suggests that you want to have a chat to Alistair about this, because you've got such a long-standing relationship, but you also know the other parts of that and the impact that'll have, and then you're both trying to win a premiership at the same time, and so all that comes into the discussion, and you know, those are the things. You've got to keep the game in perspective. It's a wonderful game. It's a tough game. You guys in the media or supporters or everyone's got an opinion, and that's okay. But in the end, you've got to put it in perspective, and that's the thing you try and do. You don't always get it right, but you try and put it in perspective.
That Alistair Clarkson relationship you referred to there with the Buddy Franklin specific, I mean, it played out publicly once it was revealed where he was going, but did you have a falling out there of sorts over what happened there?
No, I spoke to, they just won the premiership, and so it was certainly worked out okay for them that year. And we spoke in the week afterwards, and as we always do, have an open and honest conversation. And to Alistair's great credit, moved on, and they've been able to get Tommy Mitchell, who's done okay for him as well. So, you know, it's worked out okay, I think.
Yeah. And just one more reference to Alistair before we move it on, John. Back to the Battle of Britain game. Obviously, he did something in that game which he's had to live with and has addressed it at various stages too. You being even younger than he was at that point or thereabouts, same age, how was it going back to that moment when he did what happened to Ian Aitken and then dealing with the fallout that came?
Well, there was a couple of things that were interesting. John Kennedy Sr. was our coach, who's Josh's grandfather. Obviously, makes me feel terribly old coaching Josh. But John Kennedy Sr. was the coach, and when it happened, I was on the interchange bench, and I was told to get on the ground straight away within 5 minutes. And I remember I almost crawled to the interchange bench. I was petrified what was going on out there. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. And
you were 16, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And as soon as I stepped over the line, Reece Jones made sure that he let me know that this is the big boys' game. And
he gave you one?
Yeah, it was on. And I had to grow up pretty quickly. And so
you probably could have handled yourself, though. You're a big 16-year-old and you'd come from the bush.
Yeah.
But even in that moment, you were out of your depth, so to speak.
Well, I played senior footy in the country, and they test you a fair bit. And I was fortunate I wasn't small, but it was an eye-opener, you know, at that level, just to see what was going on. I think there was something like 12 reports, and we were staying at the same hotel as those guys afterwards, so it was quite an interesting post-match function. And but it's, you know, it's sort of one of those great pieces of the football journey you go on, at particularly early days as a 16-year-old kid that just... you know, I couldn't believe it.
Mm. And then you mentioned John Kennedy and the influence he's had, obviously, on football is profound. The influence he had on you as that young teenager initially making his way in the game.
Yeah, as a person, and his
really?
Values. He's just such an incredible presence. When he walked into a room, I've never seen someone command a room without saying anything as well as John Kennedy Sr. And his voice, as it's been well documented, just his impact he had and the values that he talked about as a person beyond football remains such a strong part of the Kennedy family. You can see it in Josh. It's written all over him. It oozes out of him.
You can see Josh?
Oh, just
John in Josh?
Oh, just the way he holds himself. Josh's dad, the Kennedy family, the traditions, the football knowledge, the way that they go about their business, the honesty, all of that is absolutely oozes out of Josh. And you know, it's a great thing to be able to say that I, you know, was coached first of all by John Kennedy Sr. and then I feel very fortunate to be able to coach Josh.
Mm. John, it's sometimes forgotten when people reflect upon your involvement in the game, but you were a 19-year-old Coleman medalist. It's it's an extraordinary achievement.
Yeah. I was fortunate. It's a little bit different, the game back then, and I think there was a couple of injuries to Dunstall and Ablett and Lockett that year, so I might have struck it a lucky year. But fortunately to be able to kick a few goals there for a while, and then Wayne Carey started to dominate, and I just learned to get out of his way. But, we were really fortunate in the early days.
I mean, you're talking that down, as you always do about yourself, but just for those who do forget, 511 goals from the 200 games you played. But it's actually even better than that, because the last 45 games you played only reaped 17 goals. So it's actually 155 games for basically 500 goals, thereabouts. So average of 3.2 for those particular sequence of games. 36 occasions you kicked 5, 18 occasions you kicked 7, the two famous ones more than 10, the 12 and the 14 in the 1 year. It's a lot of goals, and you're almost forgotten, aren't you, in the conversations about full forwards of a great era?
Yeah, look what happened is my wife's quite happily tells anyone that's willing to listen, I peaked at 19 and went downhill from there. So she pumps my tyres up endlessly. But look, it's something that, you know, I was fortunate. I came into the gram. I was a bit, I was built okay compared to some of the kids at my age. So, and we were part of a very successful era that started. There were 7 preliminary finals, 3 grand finals, 2 premierships. I didn't play in all of them, but. I was fortunate that I was able to make some small impact there in the 90s.
Even then you're playing yourself down. You say you peaked at 19 and whatnot. But there were 6 years in a row where you kicked between 58 and 98 goals, twice in the 90s, back-to-back 90-goal return season. So you obviously knew what you were doing. You had a year at fullback as well prior to all that.
Yeah, and that was part of the learning of playing full forward. What I was thrown to fullback. and to learn the game. And that's what John Kennedy Sr. did, taught me that. And I use those values still when teaching some of the players that we teach now, young players coming through. And the back end of my career, I had two knee reconstructions and was probably, to be fair, done at 24 and a half, 25, and hung on for a couple more years. Lost all sorts of agility and jumping and speed and anything that I might have had, and spent a bit of time in the ruck as a ruck bag and down back and just trying to hang on, and was lucky to play in a premiership in my last game. So, you know, I was hanging on by the skin of my teeth.
You were, weren't you?
Yeah.
And getting into that last game on when Jason McCartney got suspended and the vacancy was created, do you think you would have played regardless? Because there was a significant push from the senior players at that time, one Kerry Led, to get you into that 22 or 21 as it probably was back then.
Yeah, I was in the team the week before because Cameron Mooney and I were going for the same spot, and I think Dennis Pagan wasn't convinced that I was going to play in the grand final, and he was convinced that I'd lost all speed and agility, which I had, and we did a running test at Arden Street when he put us on the ground. Harry Unglick actually suggested to do it, and we lay on the ground and I thought, I'm going to have to pull out some tricks here. So he said, go, and we had to jump up and turn around. I whacked Moons in the stomach, and lucky it was dark enough. The lights of the Arden Street didn't pick that up, and all of a sudden Dennis thought I could still run. And that might have had some sort of small say in me getting a game, but I had three possessions in the grand final, two ineffective, and carried on like I won the Norm Smith.
Dealing with that, John, someone who's proud and someone who'd achieved what we just outlined before, but as you say, basically gone at that stage. How do you deal with that? Even going into that particular game, knowing that you're probably at 40, 50% rack power of your full work.
And I didn't get a game the year before in the grand final. I missed out on selection. And so I played a fair bit of reserves game football in the last few years. And the biggest thing was that you go from a regular senior player, one of the ones picked in the forward line every week, And then you go to training down the other end with the reserves boys, and I hated it, and I felt embarrassed by it, and I just hated it, and went down the other end of the ground at training and did my work with whatever was down there, and I found it a real battle to psychologically deal with being a regular part of the senior team, and then for 3 years just scrapping for my football existence. But there's so much good come out of it, and Dennis was right. It's not until you go through a football career and you look back on it that you think he was right. At the time, you can't see it, and as a player, you can't see it at the time. You just genuinely believe that you should be in the team, and I absolutely believe that, and I was more than happy to tell my wife about it, or my girlfriend back then, but now my wife, that how difficult it was and how tough Dennis was. I mean, I should be playing, but I look back on it now and he was right.
And do you draw on those experiences and maybe the reflections of those experiences now when you demote someone?
Yeah, no question. It's it plays on your mind all the time. And I find the older you get and the more experienced you become as a senior coach, in some ways it can be more challenging because you understand what's involved a lot more than what I first did when I started coaching. You understand the impact on people and their lives. But what you also know is that you've got a job to do, and you have to make really tough decisions. And I don't enjoy it, and particularly when you're delisting players. And Ryan O'Keefe was a good example. Dropping him was extremely tough, but you know it's tougher for him. So you just got to swallow it.
And do you say that to the individual when those moments come?
No, because you don't really listen as a player. That's my view. At that time, Dennis probably said a lot of things to me as well, but you don't really listen. All you hear is you're out and you just want to go and clear your head.
In 2019, Damien Barrett will go inside the stories in conversation with the most influential figures in football in his new weekly podcast, In the Game, exclusive to afl.com.au and the AFL app. Subscribe to In the Game with Damien Barrett wherever you get your podcasts, or connect with Damien on Twitter via @BarrettDamien.
The Buddy Franklin, Wayne Carey comparisons, John, you're as equipped as anyone to deal with that. You're a famous teammate of Wayne Carey's and you're a coach of Buddy Franklin. Can you line them up in any way?
Yeah, I've been asked this a couple of times, Damo. I'm sort of I find it really difficult. I had the best seat in the house probably watching Wayne run around at centre-half forward, and you know, his consistent ability over a long period of time was incredible. His moments, his big impacts at big moments was outstanding. His teammanship, he brought players into the game all the time, and that was his great strength as a player. Lance is similar in a lot of ways. He brings a lot of the other players into the team with him, and he gets excited when the kids in particular score goals. I can't compare them, but they're very similar, and I know that sounds strange. They're very similar in their impacts on games. Mentally strong, tough, competitive beasts. I don't think of, you know, the very best are the ones with the most talent and the biggest competitors. And the ones with the most talent and the biggest competitors that I've seen have been Kerry and Franklin, and you can't separate them.
The two highest of all people.
Yeah. Well, with the talent combined with the competitive spirit, there's been plenty of competitors I've played with or coached, but with the elite talent that they've got, that they both had, their level of competitiveness is outstanding.
I know it's a journalism technique here, John, and it's an inexact science, but they're both on the wall right now.
Oh, no.
And you've got one pick, and no. you have to have a pick.
Well, at the moment, I'd pick Lance because
oh, okay.
because he's playing.
When he retires after this 9-year deal, what would you do? When you reflect upon everything you know about
him. I don't know. Come and speak to me then.
No, I will. I'll hold you to it.
Yeah.
2012, the first time you and your second year as coach of the Swans got into a grand final, win it. 2014, lose one. 2016, lose another one.
Yeah.
The losing ones, I don't want this to sound too simplistic, but how tough are they to endure?
Oh, they're extremely tough. I think Alistair describes it as going into a cave afterwards, and he's right. And I don't mean to be morbid about that. Or people to feel sorry for coaches. I understand it's what we do, but you know, when you put yourself up there and you realise that there's so much involvement, you know, one of the toughest things you can do is go to the dinner afterwards, for instance, and you sit there and you feel solely responsible. And it's not right. It's not correct. There's a lot of things that go into it, but you can't help but feel that. You feel like you're the one that's let the club and the supporters down. And it's once again, not to say to feel sorry for everyone, but you do take it really, really hard. And Alistair describes it like that. And he's obviously been at the top of the mountain more than any of us. And so you need to be able to deal with that and get over that pretty quickly, because you've got to front up the next week, talk to the players, go through the interview process and move on. And you know, that takes some doing, and you need to make sure that the right people are around you to be able to help you through that.
Yep. Observations made not just by yourself and people at the Swans about the umpiring within the 2016 grand final against the Western Bulldogs. Do you dwell on that at all now?
No, not now. It's done and dusted. Good luck to them. They were fantastic. They had a wonderful year. And they deserve to win. So, you move on. At the time, you're just hurting because you've lost a grand final. And it does sit in your gut for a while, the fact that you've lost one. And you need to be able to deal with it and move on. And that was done and dusted long ago.
Yep. Contractually, as we speak, about to enter the 2019 season, I believe you have got two more years beyond this year as part of that contract?
The end of 2020. This year and next year.
Yeah. Do you know what you're going to be doing beyond that point?
Absolutely no idea.
No. Do you want to know soon?
No, I just go about my business. I mean, I've got 2 years of my contract to go. So if you look in the space of 3-year deals, I'm 1 year in. So it's just not on my mind at the moment.
There's always been a pull back to Melbourne, and maybe the pull comes from outsiders, not necessarily yourself. But going back to 2006, it's a long time ago now. You'd been at the Swans for the initial part of that phase after starting there in 2002. The St Kilda job was open, and you were an absolute front runner and got right to the end.
Yep.
And I know there's been other approaches, North Melbourne, for instance, at one stage as well, and I reckon maybe unofficially as well. Do you think you'll end up in Melbourne?
I have no idea. I've been really fortunate to be part of two great footy clubs, one as North Melbourne as a player and now in Sydney as a coach. I feel very fortunate. I don't take that lightly. I've been there for a number of years. We've been fortunate to have a great playing group. I enjoy the challenge of getting another generation of Swans players going again and being successful. So I actually don't know. I don't spend any time thinking about it. I don't have the time to. And I'm assuming at some point I'll be thinking and reflecting about that, but just now I just don't spend any time thinking about it, to be honest. My kids have grown up in Sydney, born in Sydney, growing up in Sydney and going to high school in Sydney. And
how old are they now, John?
I've got a 15, a 13, 11-year-old. And, yeah, they surf. They love the city. Got great friends there, as you do when you're born there. So who knows? Who knows what's down the track? I don't spend any time thinking about it.
Yeah, fair enough. We touched on you were a goal-kicking crew before. Just back to 1990. Going into that last round against Collingwood with 96 goals to your name.
Yeah.
And then having 10 shots at goal but falling two goals short.
Thanks for bringing that up, Dave.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, surely we've been a good chat until now.
2-8. What happened?
I was a 19-year-old kid and we were going into Collingwood, obviously a very good team that year. They won the premiership and we couldn't make the finals. All the focus was on helping me kick the 100. And I kicked two pretty early and thought, I've got to be bit confident and I thought this might be done by half time. And then I missed the first one, missed the second one, missed the third one. And then it was just, it went pear-shaped. And
do you use the choke word?
Oh, well, you can't help but do it. I mean, 19 and I was, I don't know what you were doing at 19. Well, a lot of I look at the kids now that are 19 playing footy and
they weren't kicking 98 goals.
And I could have handled it a little bit better, to be fair to say, Damien. But yeah, that's all part of the learning. And I use that now as a great thing to reflect upon when you're dealing with younger players. Half of our team now are 24 and under, and so Ollie Florent, you know, he talks about, you know, he had a 29 possession game. We have a bit of a chuckle. Come on, don't give me 29 possessions, and so it's great to be able to reflect on those things when you're dealing with players now, because you know, whether they're injuries and knee reconstructions, or you didn't achieve what you wanted to achieve, or missing out on premierships or playing a lot of reserves footy, those things all go into the mix in your experience, and you hope you have some sort of level of empathy at the time.
When you line up what you did as a teenager, and again, 19 years old, you just can't get your head around that right now. You talk about McCartan on your list now as being the youngest player in the competition when he got drafted, having a significant impact in his first year, but it was a small impact in a small way. You were out there kicking bags and bags of goals.
Yeah.
So what's happened to footy inside that
time frame? No question, it's more defensive orientated. There's no question about that. And so that's made goals harder to kick as an individual. There's certainly, you know, for the 900 that Lance has kicked, whatever he ends up with at the end of his career will be pretty significant during this period, because there's more of a focus. There's 8 coaches. It's more defensive orientated from all parts of the game. And back then it was pretty open. And things are different. So it's a bit easier to kick goals back then. I'm not sure how I would have done these days.
The remoteness of the Sydney Swans in an AFL perspective, it both works and works against you and your club, doesn't it? Can you just give us an insight as to how it works against the Swans?
Well, we understand that it's headquarters are in Melbourne. A lot of the media gets generated out of Melbourne. The rationalisation that's happening across the media landscape is very tough, and so we understand that. But we also got a strong supporter base here in Melbourne. There's 11,000 or 12,000 members. We've got the South Melbourne heritage. We value that, so we need to make sure we service that. And so we're aware of that. And as part of the challenges, it's also the part of the challenge is just understanding that we struggle to get training grounds. And at the very core of a football club is being able to have a training ground, and we don't take that for granted. In fact, it's not unusual to be spending a lot of hours talking about where the hell we're going to train. And that's probably something that people don't understand.
There's a perception, I think, of some, and it may be Eddie McGuire driven in the eyes of some, that it's this juggernaut, unstoppable, and everything's on a platter. But you clearly and regularly say that's not the case.
No, it's not. And we don't say that for any sympathy. It's just trying to put some balance into it. That's all. And we're doing a lot of work to try and fix that. And we will, at the end of next year, 2020, we'll have an elite training venue. But that'll be the first time for a long time that that we can actually say that. And for the game itself, it's going so growing so quickly in Sydney that we need training venues. If we can't get training venues, well, God help the kids and particularly the girls that are coming through to be able to get training grounds.
And John, just as we close this chat, and I appreciate your time again, as you enter this year, you're ninth in charge of the Swans. Are you as excited about what lies ahead in the next 22 games as you were that first year?
Yeah, absolutely. It's for different reasons. Then you're going through, you've got to, the list was a little bit more mature. Even though we sort of went through a rebuilding phase, we lost a number of players, star players, during that period of time that played in premierships. This generation of players coming through, I get excited by. The young kids we've got coming through, I love working with. And I'm really confident in our leaders to be able to teach them the right way to play footy. And that's what's happening. That's what gets me out of bed every day. And I just love the challenge of trying to build a footy club, and particularly in the northern markets. And that's why I'm excited.
Appreciate your depth of answer here today, John.
No worries. Thank you, Damo.